Well, hello everybody, and thank you for the presentation, and thank you for this opportunity to discuss the paper by Arlon, Holland and Røsok. Coming from Denmark, it has been interesting to learn about the standardization process in a Scandinavian sister country, and I noted in the comparability paper from yesterday that Norway and Denmark still belongs to the same cluster, which I'm happy to see. But I also expect that readers from other countries will find the paper interesting. So my role here as a discussant is, as I see it, to try to provide context from an academic angle. And let me impolitely begin with a nasty question. Is it really possible for an international audience to learn much from a single country case study? In this case, about an attempt to standardize financial reporting in Norway in accordance with IFRS SME. Now, my justification for this nasty question is actually what the authors write themselves. So on page 7, for instance, that standardization is case specific and depends on the participants, their goals, and their strategies to attain these goals. And on page 34, they write, overall, the importance of context in the standardization process cannot be understated, as existing institutional structures are not easily replicated in different settings. So the standardization process will likely not be replicable elsewhere. So my own answer to the nasty question is that it depends. It depends on whether the setting and the analysis is able to extract and highlight something of general interest. One should recognize that there's a difference between something that only exists in Norway and something that can only or advantageously be examined in Norway. And in my opinion, the study by Arlon, Holland and Røsok is of the second type. I find the Norwegian setting interesting. Since 1998, financial accounting regulation in Norway has been based on an accounting law which Kvål describes as an outlier in the accounting landscape, with a strong emphasis on the income concepts and the matching principle, at a time when the focus of accounting regulation in leading countries shifted to more asset liability orientation based on stringent definitions in a conceptual framework. At the same time, Norwegian GAAP draws on a number of sources, the International Accounting Standards, UK GAAP and US GAAP. We see that Norway has a standard setter who has never formally been recognized by the government. But on the other hand, the government has representatives in the committee from the Ministry of Finance and the financial supervisory authorities as observers. The Norwegian standard setter apparently prefers to base new regulations on the choices in IFRS SME, if not full IFRS, and has proposed to integrate this formally in the law. The government seems to shift its position. Major business schools disagree. Auditors seem to prefer different solutions when they are in the committee mode and in the market mode. And most preparers are against IFRS SME, while at the same time, they've been recognizing that this move has been ongoing for a long time in Norwegian GAAP. So in sum, I think the paper is based on an interesting setting. It contains all three modes of standardization identified in the literature, committee-based, market-based, and government-based. And hence it provides a good opportunity for meeting Wiegmann et al.'s call for research to obtain a better understanding of multimode standardization. And together with the author's specific focus on the role that comparability plays in the standardization process, I think the ground for potentially interesting takeaways has been laid out for a broader audience. The paper seems to have a dual purpose. The first is to respond to Wiegmann et al.'s call for research that used the multimode standardization perspective to investigate the interplay of the committee mode, the market mode, and the government mode. Here the aim is to integrate all three modes simultaneously in order to obtain a better understanding of standardization processes in accounting. The second purpose is to analyze the concept of comparability and the role this concept specifically has in the standardization process. Now, the authors mention one as a contribution, but the formally stated research questions and results are more about two, I think. If we look at the first purpose of the paper, the authors clearly build on the thoughts or framework by Wiegmann et al. Wiegmann et al. Stress the importance of interactions between modes, both as regards a mode influencing the relationship between the remaining two modes, but also the impact of this relationship's dynamics on what happens within that mode. Wiegmann et al. Gives the following examples. Actors who anticipate that governments will intervene may engage in relevant committees to ensure that the resulting standards reflect their preferences. Another example is government intervening in a standardization process in response to interactions between the committee and market-based modes, which lead to an unsatisfactory result of the standardization process. So in Wiegmann et al., interactions and intermode dynamics are very important. If we look at the paper by Arlon, Holland, and Rösser, we find that it contains numerous references to interplay, interactions, and dynamics between the modes. However, although the paper seems to recognize the importance of such interactions, much of the analysis takes place within the different modes. Here, the authors highlight each mode's individual contribution to the standardization process and how comparability is viewed by participants in each of the modes. I do not think that much regard is given to the dynamic interplay between the modes. So overall, I think the paper does not at least fully meet the suggestion for further research in Wiegmann et al. I took up this quote from Wiegmann et al. By the right, that the first suggested area for research could look in more detail into the processes leading to the emergence of new standards. Multimode standardization processes are highly dynamic, but current literature does not provide sufficient evidence about the interactions in these processes. Moreover, Wiegmann et al. Mentioned that the standardization cultures which the involved actors are familiar with could be important. There are indications of a special standardization culture in Norway. Kvål calls the current Norwegian accounting law an outlier in the global accounting landscape. And there seemed to be agreement in 1998 when the law was enacted that Norway should find a distinctive road to accounting. So my question is there a specific Norwegian standardization culture which might affect the outcome, the view on comparability, or the dynamics between the modes? Now let's try to go inside the modes. This slide shows an extract from table 2, which describes the key events and the related documents in the Norwegian process. I have highlighted here the three instances where the participants in the market mode are active, and active in the sense that they initiate communication. As we can see in this table, in the table, this is only situations where the market participants have sent in comment letters to an exposure draft from the Norwegian Standard Setter and to two reports from the government. Well, I see this as a more reactive rather than proactive role. However, when Wiegmann et al. Described the market mode's contribution to a standardization process, then this is about situations where private companies actively compete for a solution and the individual actors influence the outcome with their actions. As I understand the Norwegian setting, I think there's room for a larger contribution from the market mode based on competition. The Norwegian law contains an overriding requirement which states that the preparation of financial statements shall comply with good accounting practice. And we can note here that it's not good accounting principles, it's good accounting practice. And we also see learn that the Norwegian standard setter has never been formally recognized and given any rights by the government and parliament. To me, this seems to provide the space for companies to try to define, I mean, compete over what constitutes good accounting practice. So the resulting equilibrium may affect the attitudes or positions towards new and tighter rules. Arlon, Holland and Røsser do not discuss this, perhaps because such events took place before the beginning of their sample period. However, this and the raised issue about culture illustrates that conditions that were established far back in time potentially can contribute to an analysis, and that it may not therefore be enough to include events and documents from a more limited period. Let's turn to the second purpose. I do not have that many comments to the second purpose of the paper, the analysis of comparability. From Arlon, Holland and Røsak's discussion and analysis, we see that those opposing using IFRS SME often argue that that it makes unlike things look similar. In other words, they argue, we are so special that transactions are different. They are unlike things when they appear in our company, industry or country. So different accounting rules, local customizations are therefore necessary in order to provide useful information. Some may be right, not-for-profit organizations are perhaps so special that they need some form of customization. For instance, the FASB has had a standard for not-for-profit organizations since 1993. However, I think arguments advanced by for-profit organizations seem less convincing. The authors mention an example about a large energy company that was used as an argument in Norway against IFRS SME to the benefit of greater focus on comparability between companies at the national level and within their industry. The energy company changed its net income from positive 874 million Norwegian kroner under Norwegian GAAP to negative 198 million Norwegian kroner under IFRS. The reason was that unrealized losses on hedging instruments are recognized in profit and loss according to IFRS. I suppose that this reflects that Norwegian GAAP has allowed companies to keep the hedging instruments off balance sheet even with an unrealized loss. I think it's hard to see that characteristics of the reporting entity or the industry should be so different that the IFRS solution would result in a situation where unlike things look similar. I mean, what is it that is unlike here? The fact that the IFRS standards have special hedging rules shows that the ISB acknowledges that different use of financial instruments by companies should result in different reporting. So in this way, they make unlike things look different.
So, Frank, it's just down to about a minute and a half, please.
Yeah, this is my last slide, so that's fine.
Sorry.
So, to me, it seems that many opponents of IFRS SME use arguments about the importance of comparability within an industry or within that country because we are different as an excuse to maintain privileges awarded by current accounting regulations, such as cost savings, maintain control over the standard setting process, or maintain flexibility. So since this is a joint conference with the ISB, I found this old quote by the late Professor Lloyd C. Heath in Financial Executive 1990. One former FASB member told me recently that 95% of the comments the board receives from financial statement preparers fall into one of three categories. Don't make any changes, don't move so fast, and don't make income volatile, don't let it fluctuate. The same likely applies in Norway. Now, Arlon, Holland and Røsak do not discuss comparability arguments as a self-serving technique, but the paper highlights different interpretations of the concept of comparability. It extracts the dimensions of comparability that participants use as ammunition, and it makes the reader reflect on such things, which is interesting. So I think there's food for thought here in the paper. So that concludes my discussion, and I will now hand it over again to you, Tom. Thank you.